FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Financial Survival Network is brought to you today by Orin Resources, a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major. It's hot on the trail of the next globally significant discovery, creating enormous potential upside for you, the shareholder. Orin is one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management has a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets. No wonder Orin's been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and the NYSE under AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYNResources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 2/25/19. Month almost over. A lot has happened. If you've been watching, a lot more is going to happen, no doubt. But one of the major stories of the month has been the Jussie Smollett attack, the so-called Jussie Smollett attack, and its aftermath and what's happening there. Kind of really has a companion story, the Covington Catholic High School kids and their supposed misdeeds and bad behavior. First, as always, we love getting your emails. First thing I do every day is bang down a cup of coffee and read them. And the address is kl@kerrylutz.com. So what about this? Are we too quick to outrage and too slow to forgive? It used to be, I don't know if it's in the Bible, but it's common sense. Be very slow to take offense and very quick to forgive. It seems like modern day society is the exact opposite of that. Well, our good friend, Dr. John Huber, is with us now. He's a clinical forensic psychologist and gives, John, you've given great perspectives on many public issues in the past. So, Smollett, if you had any, and honestly, I ignored the story when it first came up. I just said, every time I hear a story about a noose, every time I hear a story about an attack that's publicized, I automatically, my BS meter goes up and I just say, no, this can't be true. I don't believe it. I want to wait for additional evidence. I've been conned too many times in the past. So, as always, welcome. But where do we leave off here? What is the lesson of these stories?
Well, I think one of the big lessons for the story, one of the big things we got to learn from this is that most of America has shifted their thinking to a more visceral, emotional type response. And there's a couple reasons I believe why that is, and I'll get into that in a second. But we stop thinking critically about stuff. We are just going to react because, especially if there is some social cause, we're against homophobia, we're against, racial inequality, we're against all that stuff. And the way to show it is to be vehement and let the world know that you are mad about this. And the way I kind of look at it is if we step back and look at some normal social phenomena, for example, when I interview people, whether I'm interviewing for a radio show or I'm interviewing them because I'm giving them a psychological evaluation, people are relatively sharp. They tend to catch little mistakes here and there. They're on the ball. They're right there present. Now, you take that same person and you put them into a group and ask them to make a decision as a group. The first thing that happens is you start having these group interactions, these dynamics. And once they find out whether their group is similar and they agree with each other, whether it's politics or religion or whatever's going on, the type of chicken they like to eat on Sunday afternoon, they all feel like there's camaraderie there and they're brethren. But the bizarre thing that happens is they fall into what we used to call groupthink, where people would just agree with whoever the group leaders are and not really critically analyze anything, even when as individuals they said, oh, if something like this happened, that would be crazy. But then in the group, they do that crazy thing. Now, jump ahead to 2007, we got smartphones released to the public. Then within days, virtually, you have social media things popping up all over the place. And now we get the choice to join these social media groups, follow certain people, dislike or unfriend other people. And all of a sudden, you've created a virtual groupthink scenario because you surround yourself with people who are like-minded, who agree with you, who are outraged at the same things you're outraged at. Now we stop critically thinking because we think somebody in the group will help us. They'll jump in and surround us. But then you start walking down the street thinking everybody standing around you has the exact same belief set that you do.
Yeah.
Now jump forward to probably the last 2 or 3 years. I think we've had between 12 or 14 types of or different instances where something like this happened, where somebody feigned being assaulted, feigned some group did it to them. And then if they found out, the police, the authorities found out that it was not what they said, that they self-assaulted themselves or set it up to look like they'd been assaulted. And all those got swept under the rug. Now come along with a Jussie Smollett. And all of a sudden, this guy's got credibility as an actor. He's a decent actor. He's making decent money. You know, a lot of people like to have the situation he's got. Now, all of a sudden, he claims that this has happened. Now, I was much like you. I kind of kept my mouth shut. As a forensic psychologist, I saw some red flags going up. Every person I've ever interviewed who's been assaulted, the first thing they did is get out of the binds that held them. So if they were being tied, they got rid of that. They threw it down. They didn't walk into the police department with the noose still around their neck. That is extremely bizarre behavior. There's some other stuff going on, like he got this attack letter threatening racial attacks. He got it as this, supposedly because of his character, his credibility as an actor in Chicago, that kind of stuff. Then these guys hid and waited to attack somebody. He happened to get hungry a few days later at 2 in the morning, walks down to a deli where he could have done, you know, what, there's 30 different ways you can get food delivered today, even with stores and restaurants that don't deliver. But in 20 degree below zero at 2 o'clock in the morning, he decided to walk there instead of taking his own car, an Uber or a driver even.
Little weird, huh?
Very strange. And then these two guys targeted the same person that got the letter, which is very much an anomaly. Crime is opportunistic. You are a criminal. You don't want to have to work hard. So you're not going to be out hiding in 20 degree below zero, let alone at 2 o'clock in the morning to randomly pick anybody who happens to be the same person you wrote the letter to, and knowing when he went to go and eat and where he went to eat. Just too many coincidences. So I kept my mouth shut and backed away. I mean, if you're robbing a bank, you're not going to mail them a letter and then attack them the next day. That's kind of the mentality of that. Well, now we got this guy and people around the country, organizations who are against hate and bigotry, jumped out and, oh my goodness, this is crazy, because what do? They read the headline. They didn't read the body of the text. I think as individuals, if they had started reading like you and I did, they would say, wait, this just doesn't add up here. I'm going to be quiet and let the police do their job for a little bit.
Yeah.
I think, though, we've created that artificial groupthink in our daily lives 24/7. And I want to be the leader of my group in the hierarchy of that group and be the first person to throw my hatred against bigotry out there. So now we've got everybody else in my group preaching to me and supporting me. So if I'm not loud enough, if I'm not strong enough in my vehemence, then I'm not the leader anymore. So I've got to do this and everybody else follows suit. And it's a very critical thing, I think, at this point in our country, in our history. When we stop thinking critically and only respond emotionally, we start making really stupid mistakes. I think we're looking at some of those right now.
And the media also, let's not forget, the media wants it to be true because they want to sow discord and they want to
newspapers.
Yeah, that's they want to get clicks. It's clickbait.
That's right.
It's clickbait of the most cynical time imaginable, type imaginable, and and yet there's no accountability for the media here. Look, I'll go to the Covington Catholic school kids. So they show this 15-second excerpt, and all of these celebs and media people come out and just saying horrible things about these kids. And, you know, they forget that, yeah, the media has a privilege, but not when it comes to minors. Minors are not public officials, and they can't hide behind, well, they're public figures, rather. They can't say we're public. They're public figures because if it wasn't for the media doing their thing, they wouldn't have become public figures. So it's the most cynical argument ever on the planet. And hopefully they're going to they're going to get burned for it because they deserve it. I mean, they really do. They almost ruined these kids' lives. And the kids, as it turned out, did nothing wrong.
Absolutely. And the person who instigated everything did a lot of wrong things that you don't hear that. You don't hear the outrage for them potentially harming these kids because it doesn't fit the narrative. It's not that emotionally driven that's going to cause their readers to go through and click and they get more income and revenue. And it's about selling papers. It's about getting that screen time. Are you going to watch this video? Mm-hmm. And so they're encouraged to do it. So what we have is a news media that is taking shortcuts. It is so easy to jump on that bandwagon. There's no creativity. There's no writing skills involved in it. They don't have to be good at what they do to get a lot of attention. You know, it's really easy on any kind of media outlet, whether it's social media or newspapers, your local town paper, whatever. It is so easy to get attention and to get focused by being derogatory. These people are evil, yada, yada, yada. But you can't prove a negative, so you can't go out and defend yourself.
Yeah.
At the same time, to put yourself out there and say, this is what I like about this a restaurant, for example, or a movie, something that's relatively benign. This is what I like about it. All of a sudden, the writer, the person who is putting this out there is making themselves extremely vulnerable. They're telling people insights about where they grew up, what kind of life they live, and that type of stuff. And it's threatening, and it takes skill to do it well.
Mm.
It takes a lot of work. And
so true.
The people out there, whether you're in social media, they want ease. They want convenience. They don't care to let people know what they really feel or think because they don't want to be targeted. It's really bizarre when you think about it, but that's what's going on. And it's too easy for the media to get click-throughs, to post, you know, 20 pages in on their website. Oh, we made a mistake last week. And then there's 3 pages worth of stuff in there. And in a lot of cases, they don't even have to put anything derogatory in the meat of the article. They just have to have a good title because it's a 10-minute news cycle with social media in your back pocket. So there's nobody's going to sit and take the time to read the whole article because 10 minutes later, there's another post. Somebody else has popped that up there.
Yeah, this is what happens.
It's too easy.
It's always what's happening here. We see it so many times, Doctor. And yet they keep falling for it over and over and over again. How can that be? How can they just fall for this when,
you know, that part is relatively simple. We have trained our children and our college students to not think critically. It's, you know, today it's more about ABCD multiple choice tests, and you teach them how to answer a multiple choice question, and the questions get easier and easier and easier till it's just a level of recognition. They just have to recognize that this is associated with the question, and they get it right. And it's difficult to write good test questions, and it's easy to write those recognition level questions where all you have to do is make that association that, oh, this has something to do with this answer, it must be the right one. So when you teach to test instead of teach to think, we are doing a disservice to our country. And we've done that. But at the same time, I'm kind of hopeful about this. I think they're, you know, going back to 2007, this new technology hit the market. And in 12 years, not only has it changed the United States, it has changed the whole world.
Very true. Very true.
What else did that? What else did that? Well, radio, television. Let's look at television. Television started out and we had two or three channels, you know, the big three, and then we get a local public channel and then national public radio or public television. And then we started with the UHF channel. So, you know, between the 40s and 60s, most people had anywhere from 3 to 7 or 8 channels, max. 70s came along and towns started getting these localized hotspots of cable television and they could watch 20 to 30 channels. Wow. Local access TV. Today we have over 300 channels available at any given time. And now with what we have on the internet, we have many more. But we had time as a culture to absorb those two or three channels and learn how to, hey, wait a minute, if I get caught up in this, it's kind of useless information. I've wasted my evening. So I got to be careful about that. And we learned how to deal with it as parents. We taught our kids. Yeah. When we got to 5 channels, we also worked with our kids and it was easy to manage. We get them outside. We play sports. We start watching sports on the channels. We evolved. Now there's 300 channels. We don't have a problem with it. We're not totally, you know, inundated and just
lots of
coal sitting on your couch. Social media hit us overnight and we're playing catch up. We don't know how to deal with it. We're going through growing pains. But just like they said on television, you know, when Elvis Presley was on and his hips hit the airwaves, they said it was the decline of Western civilization. We're on our way out.
They were probably
America
right.
Will be no more. And we survived Elvis. We will survive social media. We've got to get caught up. We're going through growing pains. Yes, that's true. And, you know, if you're interested, we can talk about some of the things that I have my clients do, some of the things that I actually did myself. So I know they work. It's kind of bizarre how social media has taken control of everything. It's really crazy.
Yeah. You know, I think you just summed it up. Social media has taken control of everything. And yet the social media titans here, mainly I'm talking about Facebook, whatever you call it, and Twitter, they're in pronounced states of decline. They're losing users right and left. Facebook has Instagram, so they managed to hold on there, but purely as, you know, a stopgap. And I think you're going to see the fragmentation of it. And I don't know how it's going to evolve, but with the price of memory and computing power and everything else going to near absolute zero, I think opportunities are going to arise. I mean, I'm against the censorship that's taking place on these platforms now. I really am, but
Amen.
I think it's temporary.
Amen.
I think it's really temporary because I think the advantages they hold are going to be temporary. Temporary might be 5-10 years. But temporary nonetheless, the government might come in and crack down, which I think they should. I think these platforms are public utilities. So I think in that regard, they need to be controlled. Not so much controlled in what they present, but controlled in terms of not allowing them to censor. Needs to be a common carrier. Everybody gets their say as long as you're not advocating violence or criminal behavior. Then I think you basically get your kick at it. They shouldn't be able to just shut you out because they don't like what you have to say. So in any event, so you're optimistic about this, huh?
I am optimistic. I think, you know, what should probably happen is we should start looking at media ethics, not censorship. But like you said, you know, you should have a right to say what you want to say. But if you stand up and yell fire in a movie theater, you should be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
Inciting to riot is one thing, and that's not freedom of speech. So,
right.
So that's what we got to start watching. You know, in the 90s, we saw a decline in newspaper credibility. And what was happening was I watched it as I was teaching. that our journalism department got rid of a section of the university newspaper, the fact-checking section, where they were teaching journalists how to go back and verify some story was actually done, that the interviews were actually done. You know, just making phone calls, following up that way before they ever released those. And what we started looking at as a university, we were like, why are they doing that? Well, we started looking and major leading newspapers like the New York Times got rid of theirs. So the universities followed suit. Why are we teaching somebody to do a job that's not going to be there anymore?
Yeah, pretty outrageous when you think about it. Well, I think the final chapter has yet to be written. Dr. Huber, we want to find out more about you, connect with you, and where do we find you these days?
Well, you can follow us on social media. But the easiest way to get to that is to look at our website. And our website, the main address is mainstreammentalhealth.org. And if you, that's a little long, you want a shorter one, it's drpsycho.org, drpsycho.org.
Drpsycho.org. All right. As always, there's a link to it in the show notes. This interview, connect with us on Twitter at Carrie Lutz. Make sure you go to Financial Survival Network, sign up for our newsletter. And we also have a Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. And don't forget, if you're listening on the podcast or listening/watching on YouTube, please subscribe, like, and share us. It really helps us a lot when you do it. It really helps me get the message out to those of you out there who really need it most. And Dr. Huber, been a pleasure as always. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Carrie. Great show. I'm impressed every time you have me come on because mental health is not typically something you would think of on your show until you bring it up and bring those points together. I appreciate it greatly.
Yeah, well, it's so important. We appreciate you coming on. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.